You're so, on.
All righty. I will call the meeting to order. And if I could get a motion to approve minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All right, very good. Well, with that out of the way, I would like to welcome Dr. Doyle and thank you for joining us this evening. We reached out to you with the hope that you could address some of the concerns that we as a committee had last month regarding the 40 mental health beds and the unanswered questions of when and if they will return, and a timeline for when we could expect that to happen, when and if it does. But before we get started, I just wanted to mention for the minutes that the 40 beds in question were a part of the state mandate to free up space to make accommodations for the potential influx of COVID patients early in the pandemic. And those beds, I was under the impression would return as the virus became more manageable. So also as part of that concern we have is for months now, despite the efforts of the legislature, I know the county executive reached out, a couple of our state senators, and I know that there was also a mention, I think, in the New York Post. We are still without answers. So with those prelims out of the way, I would like to give you an opportunity to discuss, you know, the issues at hand and open the floor to the committee, you know, to ask questions as well. So with that said, Dr. Doyle, the floor is yours.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lopez. And thank you. Thank you all for having me here and giving me the opportunity to speak about this. I know it's a tremendous concern for the community. And I, as a psychiatrist, share the concerns you have. But the reality is that we moved those beds. It wasn't planned. It wasn't what we were intending to do. We moved those last March because, as you mentioned, to free up beds to create a 236 bed hospital that thankfully, thank God, we didn't need, okay? But with that, we've consolidated now on one campus, all right? There's certain financial pressures that drove that, consolidated on one campus, and that campus is Broadway, does not have inpatient behavioral health beds here, all right? We're working with the state to increase the capacity for those beds, we, meaning WMC Health, at WMC Health, at down at Mid-Hudson Region, to ensure that those 40 beds, that capacity stays within the system and stays reasonably local for our patients and for our population, and increasing the capacity in Mid-Hudson Region to accommodate, you know, for that need, all right? And so that's the activity we're doing now. As to your question of a timeline for the return, there is no timeline for them to return. I would not say never, never say never, but right now, you know, we are not planning on bringing those beds back. We're working with the state to increase the capacity at Mid-Hudson Region. We got a temporary increase for COVID for 15 beds there. We recognize that's not equivalent to 40. And so we have an application to par with the state to increase that. Meanwhile, moving forward, WMC Health with a capital improvement plan at Mid-Hudson Region to then expand that capacity and outfit the units there so that those beds remain available and are accessible to our county and our residents who need them. So that's the frank of it. That's the upshot of that. Okay.
Okay. This Al. Oh, I don't know if you had your. Did you have your hand? No. Oh,
your Peter has his hand up.
Yeah. Two questions.
Yep. Sure.
Could you clarify what reasonably local means, and can you clarify what the Mid-Hudson region comprises?
So, you know, reasonably local, these are patients, the beds are moved 20 miles away, okay? There are many communities that don't have access to inpatient psychiatric beds within that region. This is still consistent with what I would consider, you know, the Mid-Hudson region, which is, you know, really, I mean, the state says it's from Westchester all the way up to kind kind of the north end of Ulster County when we look at how the state classifies it. But, you know, those beds are accessible by our community, you know, at Mid-Hudson Region. All right. And really, you know, for me, when I look at that and when I think about what we, you know, what we're aiming for, what we want to do is I think in terms of ambulance rides and ambulance rides that save lives. Okay. And our community hospital, our community desperately needs, you know, life-saving capabilities like we're bringing to Ulster County with percutaneous coronary interventions or cath lab that we're putting in here, you know, to treat certain types of heart attacks that need intervention now that right now are leaving the community where time is morbidity and mortality, for stroke care, those kind of things that, you know, that I think have to be very local and accessible to the community. You know, 25-minute ambulance ride for a suicidal patient, again, psychiatrist, is not life endangering, okay? So, you know, a lot of that has to be taken into context. So immediate care needed in, you know, here are those that are life-saving, and we're focusing on that. And keeping those beds very local, but understanding that there's a regional approach to healthcare now that we really have to look at, and in order to sustain and provide, you know, and meet the need of the community as a whole, that we're driving for with this. I think Abe was asking.
Yeah, if I may, Dr. Doyle, thank you for being here. I very much appreciate it. And I do, you know, you brought up an issue which is really close to me, and I appreciate you confronting the ambulance issue head on. You know, you mentioned the ambulance rides between locations, and, you know, I have personal experience of you know, I coded in the ER in Kingston Hospital, and had to be transported to Westchester Medical, which required an ambulance ride from one campus to another, even before I could get on the helicopter. And so this was two facilities within the same organization. Your organization was great about the medical bills. You know, in dealing with everything, dealing with our insurance company, even Air Methods was great dealing with our insurance company, believe it or not. The only entity that was horrible to deal with, and I will go on record as saying this, was Mobile Life Services, which transported me, unfortunately by myself, because the helicopter wasn't going to have space for my wife, to the helicopter pad. And we were able to get an $80,000 or a $70,000 helicopter ride paid for by insurance. We were able to get a, you know, 5-day stay at Westchester Medical paid for by insurance. And yet Mobile Life Services couldn't figure out what everyone else had figured out about how to bill. And they sent it to collections for about $400. This whole thing cost over $250,000 for me to receive the care that I needed and we really benefited from. And they sent that to collections for $400. And I can only imagine, had my stroke resulted in serious brain damage that had not been reversed effectively by TPA in your ER as it was, that my wife would have had to deal with all of those bills without me being cognitively present. And I appreciate that the changes might potentially make more care for an urgent case like that present in Kingston, which I'm happy to hear about. But I'm very concerned about the mentally, the mentally unwell population, the population of people who are seeking mental care, having to deal with those extra medical bills that you don't think of, things like an ambulance ride. And so particularly when it comes to having to deal with insurance and having to deal with those extra trips that you might not expect when you're getting checked into, you know, Kingston Hospital and you don't, you know, and you're having an episode and that's where they bring you because that's the, you know, closest thing and it makes sense. And then you're gonna have to fight the ride that you really had no choice about over to another facility. And considering the ambulance providers, you know, that's what I'm really concerned about. One of the things.
Yeah, and so we're actively involved in negotiations with Mobile Life on this issue, on, you know, the cost of ambulance transfers. You know, some of that is strictly Mobile Life with insurance companies, but at the same time, you know, Mobile Life happily have us pay for those ambulance rides, which is a different story, but this is an ongoing issue we have with them and we've had with them, and we'll continue to negotiate. I don't know where that will go at this time. We had a contract with them and we're just in the process of renegotiating it. But it's when we just reformat this a little bit, when patients who have mental health care needs, you know, whether they, you know, when we had inpatient services here in Kingston, the point of entry was through the ER, and that will remain, okay? You know, patients who need mental health care services often come to our ER. 2019 and the data through 2020 looks very similar. 75% of patients, you know, leave the ER without needing inpatient psychiatric services. Those who do, whether we had the, you know, the care on Mary's Avenue or now down at Mid-Hudson to point A, needed an ambulance ride. Okay, they got in an ambulance and went either from the Broadway ER over to Mary's Avenue, or now going forward from the Broadway ER and they go to Mid-Hudson region. We work with those patients. You know, I've not had feedback that there are significant issues in, you know, through Mobile Life and our discussions with them around payment and payment concerns. So the issue you're describing has existed previously, okay, that patients have an ambulance ride that then has to be paid for by the service provider. That will continue, but that through this contract we've had with Mobile Life, and we'll look to continue and work out with Mid-Hudson region, should be minimized, that impact, okay? That's roundabout way of trying to say that, okay? I don't know if that answered your question.
Appreciate it.
Al was next, Laura, I'm sorry. We'll come back.
Thank you, sure. Dr. Boyle. My question is, especially you should probably have the answer better than anybody being a psychiatrist, is the region, when somebody is admitted for psychological reasons, for mental health issues, I mean, the 25% of the people that do need inpatient care and they're transported to 20 miles away, well, that may, as far as the billing, that doesn't even cross my mind, to be honest with you. I understand. A legislator, you can tell it does, and I understand why. But in this case, part of the mental health is having their family and their support structure around them. And when you take them and move them 25 miles away across the river and down to Poughkeepsie, that could be a hurdle that you're putting in front of their family for contact or from the support group that they're used to having. I mean, they're out of their element completely now. So that's got to have a compounding effect on their mental health as well. Not just the fact that that's where the beds are. And I mean, I look at both of those buildings, both on Broadway and on Mary's Avenue. And then I look at, you know, St. Francis, well, Mid-Hudson Regional, I'm sorry. And I look at the space, overall space, and 40 beds. Are you building 40 beds worth of cardiac cath care or post-cardiac cath care? I find that almost like a, and I mean this with all respect, almost like a weak argument.
Oh, no. Because
we need both. Yes. We need to have the ability to do both. For many years, we had both. And now, all of a sudden, we lost 40 years, beds. 40 beds is nothing.
For many years, we had a hospital that was failing. Okay. We had two.
Not because of that.
Failing. Okay. Two hospitals that were financially distressed. Okay. And the dollar has to fit in. You know, there's just that $1 can only go so far. And if we have to choose how we're going to apply that dollar, I think we need to choose to apply it to life-saving care here in Ulster County that we're not currently providing. As a, you know, the executive director, chief medical officer, I see that. On your point on the beds, no, those rooms still exist, okay? I think the issue that I was, you know, alluding to and speaking about, and let me just back up historically. On December 18th, last year, 2019, so a year ago, just to talk this through, we with an outside consultant looked at those rooms and said, you know, these rooms could be better from a safety standpoint. Centers of Medicaid and Medicare Services had make a point about reducing what are called ligature risks. We'd had outside consultants come in and, you know, with them made the determination that we could do better. So on December 18th of 2019, we made a capital investment and improvement that lasted into February around improving those rooms, okay, those units. Now, those of you who know the Mary's Avenue campus, we have two inpatient psychiatric units there. One was on 2 South, the other was on 2 SMC. So the 2 South unit by mid-February was brand spanking new. I mean, all new, you know, faucets and sinks and door handles and hinges and light fixtures and, you know, the hooks that the ceiling tiles go into, all locked down, you know, to prevent to limit, to you know, eliminate the risk of someone hanging themselves. I mean, this is a real thing. Again, we didn't have issues with that, but we as an entity, we as an organization said, you know, we can do better. And on December 18th, 2019, we made that commitment. And we're just moving on to working on 2SMC room by room when we had to shut the hospital down. And then we took out all of that equipment to outfit Mid-Hudson Region Hospital at that same level of safety. Okay, because it, again, the dollar only goes so far. It just does. All right. And so there's still a significant, you know, and I mentioned distressed hospitals. COVID has made a significant impact on finances for everybody. And right now we have to come up with a viable solution for going forward. And we really think that the best for the region is to consolidate those inpatient behavioral health services in one location and not duplicate them just 20 miles apart. To your point on the families, okay, as a psychiatrist, yes, you know, having family involvement, okay, can be beneficial, can be, all right? It's not a requirement, it's not essential, and sometimes it may not be helpful. And we're working, especially in the time of COVID, to find ways to do that that aren't as burdensome as traveling 20 miles. COVID has taught us a lot about telehealth and telehealth capabilities and the meaningful experience that this type of format can provide. And quite frankly, that has shown to be helpful and beneficial, even in family therapy, all right? So I think there are ways to bridge that gap, all right? And I think that's a reality right now.
So it comes down to money, bottom line.
Well, it comes down to money and doing the best we can with the money we've got, okay? You know, for necessary services that we really have to provide.
I think as a community, though, while it is a region, and this is my own opinion, and I apologize, Craig, kind of doubling up on the question.
Go ahead.
But we're a community.
Yep.
We are the county seat in Ulster County. Kingston is the place to go. It's where all our services are to all our constituents across the board. And taking them to a different county, whether it's 20 miles, 5 miles, or 50 miles, is very disingenuous in my opinion. I can't see where you can't have both. Yes, money is a driving factor. I get that. But at the same time, you also have to look at the services.
Yeah.
We have communities. Ulster County is a huge county, and it stretches from Ellenville to Saugerties to Kingston to Shawangunk to all over.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to have to go outside of the county, regardless of who owns it, whether it's Westchester Medical happens to cross county lines is one thing, but to require the families and the services to have to cross county lines is a whole nother ball of wax. And I think you're taking a vital service that Ulster County needs to provide to its constituents and to its taxpayers. You know, we're asked from time to time to support funding for these very services that are not here. And it's difficult to do that, to be honest with you. And I think you can come up with a compromise. I'm not saying you personally, but mm-hmm. I think Westchester Medical Center, whether it be at Mary's Avenue or whether it be Broadway, whether it be in a separate building as an outpatient, a small building, there's a lot of county buildings around.
Mm-hmm.
But those services need to be provided.
I think you're right. I think, you know, the tremendous need in Ulster County is for outpatient behavioral health services. You know, when you look at those numbers, it's 75% of these patients come to the ER and leave the ER. Now, we're working hard. We've created positions. We've provided grants to other agencies to help with transitions for folks who leave the ER. But there's a tremendous need for outpatient services. Okay, there just is. And you reduce that out, you know, the demand for inpatient beds by providing adequate outpatient services, which we are not doing. And that's a collective, you know, and Westchester Medical Center Health Alliance is committed to increasing our outpatient behavioral health services, but we can't do this alone. And we have to work in partnership with the county and other agencies in the county to do that, to reduce the demand for those inpatient beds. We just do.
And I think you would get more cooperation if you provided the inpatient services as well.
Laura, I'm sorry. I'm trying to avoid you. Go ahead, Laura.
That's okay. Just to follow up on Legislator Uchitel's, comment about the transportation and Legislator Bruno. So it is a two-part question. And I mean, we all understand that any not-for-profit essentially has to at least break even. And your colleagues speak very highly of you. So I know you're in a difficult position. And they said he's a really nice guy, though, so go easy on him. But the transportation, so this is the first question. If somebody is stabilized at, say, Ellenville Hospital, and, you know, for whatever, I guess they could even spend a couple of days there if they had to, they then have to be transported to Kingston, where apparently there's another analysis before they would sent to Poughkeepsie. So again, we're talking about multiple ambulances or other means to transport someone to get the mental health care that they need. And I don't know if there is a way to fund that transportation and kind of make that less of a burden to somebody who's already in distress. Here we go. and then the second part is, it's my understanding that if someone goes in because they're distressed or there's a substance abuse issue, and if you find, once they're stabilized and evaluated, if they're not in danger of hurting themselves or someone else, essentially, you know, they're back out the door, which could mean if they're still distressed, they could end up back in the emergency room in a couple of hours. And in the contract with Health Alliance, I mentioned a couple of times links, but so how far do you take, you know, the links? Is it just a matter of saying, well, you know, you're okay, you're not going to hurt yourself, call this person tomorrow? Does your staff take a step above? Will they reach out and make sure those appointments have been made? You know, I'm as Legislator Bruno, I'm looking for the real help, you know, instead of putting a Band-Aid on it, you know, that these folks get good local mental health care before something they do something terrible to themselves.
So let me take each question in part. Okay. The first question. No, it's not our practice to have folks go from one ER to another ER here in Health Alliance. Steve Kelly and I reached out to talk about that. I work closely with Matt Stubble on this issue. I think what it comes down to is their capability in, say, a place like Ellenville to hold a patient who has behavioral health concerns, to your point, up to 48 hours, and a perception that with our psychiatric emergency room, we have better capability to do that. So if that happens, it's on a case-by-case basis to provide and enhance the safety of the patient. It's our preference in working with the WMC Health Transfer Center and behavioral health psychiatry within WMC Health to have those patients go directly to the hospital where they're going to get their care. We do that with adolescents. You know, it's the same kind of approach and principle that we don't want to have multiple transfers for a patient. You know, and in the rare circumstance where there's a capacity, a capability issue in whether it's Margaretville Hospital, one of our hospitals, or Ellenville, another critical access hospital, where they simply cannot manage or maintain that patient safely. All right, so that's one, but that's rare. So more often than not, working with our transfer center and our behavioral health, you know, team within the network, getting those patients to a bed within the network, and if not, somewhere else that where the care is available. On the second question, trying to figure out how to say that. Actually, I had it. Can you restate the question? I had it a moment ago. Sorry.
Yeah, my question was, you know, looking at the contract, it kept referring to links and staff at the links.
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, in working with agencies like People USA, Samadhi, other groups, we have, and then internally, we have care managers in the ER that are embedded in the ER for the purpose of doing just what you described, reaching out to the resources in the county, in the community, where we can then connect these patients who don't meet criteria for inpatient admission but are still at risk. And that's to reduce the frequency of utilization. We track and work closely on with individuals who have, you know, repeat visits to the ER, and to find a way to address the needs that they're seeking. And that's what our care managers embedded in the ER do. It's what we have with peer counselors in particular for substance use to help connect these folks as they're leaving the ER with a peer counselor through People USA and sometimes Samadhi, and to reduce that need to come back to the ER. So that's to answer your question. Yes, we do that. Now, sometimes, you know, if the patient's leaving in the middle of the night, we may not have the ability to create an appointment. But during, you know, usual business hours, we do make those appointments. Okay. And then, yes, our care managers are following up with the patients after, you know, the following day by light of day as well, to ensure that they're making that those connections as best they can. Okay. So we get the contact information. We have that from the patients we're discharging, and we work to follow up with them after they leave the ER.
Okay, does anybody have any other questions? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just a quick question. So you're obviously aware that there's a huge public outcry about this situation. How do you propose to gain the confidence of the general public?
I think that just through our actions, okay, through, you know, working to increase behavioral health access in the community, all right? I think that by showing that the level of care we provide is, you know, equivalent to, if not better than what we were providing, all right? I think these are things we have to do and have to go back and speak to, you know, within the community. I think we have to partner, okay, with the county and with you to develop, you know, an action plan around how we address the mental health needs, the care needs. I know, again, this isn't just a Health Alliance, you're asking, you know, issue or WMC issue, but I think that, you know, I think that this issue around the inpatient beds leaving really is a lightning rod, okay, around, you know, nationally, you know, locally, a mental health crisis in our country, okay, about resources and about, you know, the paucity of those and how impoverished communities can be around mental health, all right, and keeping these beds here. I know there was one quote, you know, someone once said, or it was the county executive talked about, you know, how can we do this when opioid, you know, the crisis is going on and death rates from that. The location of inpatient beds doesn't have an impact on that. It's outpatient service. It's addressing, it's doing the things the county is already doing, say to address, you know, opioid use, but it's going farther and working to increase access to outpatient behavioral health services and decrease the need for those beds. Okay, but I think the bed issue really is a lightning rod for that, and it's a focal point. And I understand that this is, folks are anxious about it. To feel that just once again emphasizes this fear and this concern that we don't have enough resources to take care of our people. All right, and that's real. And I think that we do that, and we're committed to doing that in, you know, bringing on a licensed mental health counselor in our primary care location. We're actively working with the state right now to establish our own behavioral health practice. We have a license for that. Now just have to activate it again and get it staffed to increase mental health capabilities within the county. And then again, partnering with other agencies to do that, because we can't do it alone.
Thank you.
You know, it's indicative of a bigger issue. You know, obviously, and bringing those 40 beds back, like somebody had mentioned before, it is a Band-Aid on a bigger problem. Clearly, you were facing these issues prior to COVID. And what kind of bothers me is that I feel an advantage was taken of a situation where those 40 beds under any other circumstance would not have been available or as easily accessible to make these changes without COVID and the way it transpired. So, and I think that I also have other colleagues that share the same sentiments.
Right. Well, I know they do. And I mean, you know, if your mind's made up, I won't confuse you with the facts. I'm just saying that we made a significant investment in December and January to keeping those beds here and to ensuring, you know, the quality and safety. Okay. And then we got told by the state, we want this hospital and we want the patients gone. Okay. And, you know, I actually, when I met with the state, you know, on one of those Saturdays, said, hey, how about this hospital? This one we're going to close in 2 years when we make it a health village. Why don't we use this for COVID? And I, you know, wasn't aware of the scope and scale the state was contemplating when they said 236 beds. But I was very much aware that by doing this on Mary's Avenue, we would lose that inpatient psychiatric service. And it, that we were working to enhance the safety of the Washington. Okay, and so all that went out. So I agree that the optics of it may not, you know, be appealing, but I'm being, you know, heartfelt and saying, that wasn't the intent, all right? And now now we're a year into this. Okay, we've had to consolidate services on this campus. We just had to be clear on that from a finance standpoint. And we need to make the best of the situation we have and create a high quality, you know, equivalent program in the region, which I think we can do. But I know what it looks like. I agree. I understand.
Can I ask a quick follow-up? Sure. When you say the state, could you clarify what you mean? Is that the Department of Health or who specifically at the state level made that edict?
I recall it being Department of Health and the governor's office, you know, saying, hey, we'd like to use this hospital. We were one of several hospitals that were selected to be, you know, COVID hospitals. I don't recall where the other three were. It might have been four, okay, last year.
Wouldn't that have been the moment to push back and say, we just did this huge investment. We can't eliminate these inpatient mental health beds. This is a non-negotiable. Is there some other way we can work with you to provide what you need while still keeping this critical service that's needed here in this city?
I don't think so. Not at the time, no. I mean, we had folks, you know, dying in hallways in New York City at the time. Okay, and so I don't think that was the time to have that conversation.
Anybody else? Any more questions, comments? No.
And please, you know, please feel free. You know, I know, Craig, you wondered about the community. Please feel free to reach out to me. I'd be happy to have this conversation. I want to be open about this. Again, I think. You know, and Mark and I have talked about this before. You know, I think the way ahead is, you know, yeah, there's going to be disagreement, but we really, I think, have to work together, collaborate, and come together on how we address the mental health needs of this population. It's a great community. And I think we can do this together. I do.
I just want to say, sorry, just one more thing. So, you know, from our perspective, we're getting hammered by our constituents about this issue. So, you know, it's really difficult to go back to them and say, well, the state said they had to do it. Or, you know, I totally respect and hear what you're saying. But those are hard pills to swallow for people who really believe that the mental health bed should be restored here in the city of Kingston. It's just, I could go back and say all those things that you said, and it still will not satisfy the questions out there. So how do we as legislators and you know, people who serve our constituents, how do we go back to them and how do we talk to them?
I wish I had an answer. I mean, I think that we can speak to, you know, again, the services we're providing. I think that we can speak to, you know, that the new hospital, you know, and the current hospital over here for the community to meet the community healthcare needs, you know, that right now we're paramount, and that's the life-saving care, the care for the medically ill, the injured, all right, as well as serve as, you know, emergency intervention for psychiatric patients, which we provide, all right, and we'll continue to provide. We're going to continue to provide, you know, methadone treatment for the county. We're the only methadone treatment provider in the county. We're going to continue that. We provide, you know, bridgebacks, you know, outpatient substance abuse treatment and counseling. We're going to continue to provide that. Meanwhile, we're going to grow other services, like I mentioned, you know, that where patients are leaving the county so and risking greater morbidity because of time, like cardiac, you know, heart attacks. You know, we're working to address that. And we're sorry we can't provide everything for everyone. But on the triage list, let's provide the life-saving care. You're right, Albert, it's not 40 beds about that, but it's how do you cut those resource dollars? And how do you do that? And legislatures, you know that, you know, and so, you know, prioritizing those and speaking to the things that together we are doing and the services we are providing that are vital to this community, I think is a way to address their concerns and hear them. But you know your constituents, and I'm not running for office, you know, so, but yeah, but that's what my opinion.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Anybody else? All right then. Well, we appreciate you coming out and being candid, and you know, it's an unfortunate situation, you know, and I've expressed my my disappointment and where I think that unfortunately this is coming from, and it's going to be tough to go back to our constituents and you know, and try to explain, you know, and that's something that we're all going to have to do. And you know, hopefully be able to work together in the future really to fix the bigger picture.
Well, if it helps, I can work with Mark, or Craig, I can work with you. You know, some of those things we are doing, I can create elevator talk, talking points of things that, you know, that from a, you know, public health, social, social services standpoint that we are doing and working with the county and the community to do. If that's helpful to have those talking points, I can certainly provide those. Okay, as a follow-up to this meeting, you know, just so that you can say, this is what they are doing.
Right. No, and I get it. And I'm not talking from a political perspective. I'm talking about from a personal and, you know, a perspective of what's actually going on. And, you know, I don't care about politics of it. I just care about, you know, doing what's right by the county and by the people that need this help, and that help will not be available. So.
Okay. Could I ask, what would you need from us, and would you be able to move those 40 beds over to your Broadway campus? Is that on the table at all?
No, I mean, because of the licensing and certifications around that, all right, the plan for the consolidation of this campus has floated with, you know, New York State, and we would have one campus, and this hospital, the Broadway campus, would not be an inpatient services. This is going to be outpatient services. All right.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. Great. All right. Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Dr.
Thank you for the invite. I appreciate the opportunity to talk. I really do. Thanks for this.
Yeah. All right. Be well.
Thank you all. Have a good night.
All right.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
All righty.
Well, you guys didn't have questions on those two resolutions, did you? Because he's no longer here.
I don't think so. I think
Well, one's a pass-through that is pointless.
Right. And the other
one. Yeah, there's methadone that we have to have. So.
That we have to have. So we're kind of like caught between a box of, you know, rock and hard place.
Definitely. I think we all know why the reason we held them up. Well, anyway. Okay. Well, we
pretty much know that those beds are never coming back.
Yeah, they're never coming back.
That sounds like.
So I think as a county, and I'm going to bring this up now under discussion, I think the county should start looking elsewhere to create that sort of a facility somehow, whether it be one of the county buildings, whether it be contracted with another entity that can provide those services as an inpatient emergency care. But I think we need to start an outreach investigation somehow to try to bring them back, because everything he says, it may be true, but we still need inpatient mental health beds for not only mental health, but for opioid addiction. We have to have them here in Ulster County. 20 miles, Laura. Maybe 20 miles.
Laura?
Yeah, Chair, thank you, Chair. I think if we could, maybe next month, we could bring back that discussion of having the stabilization center. And stabilization being a little bit different than what they would consider stabilizing at an emergency room. You know, obviously if somebody's hurt or in need of, medication or whatever, that's a whole different thing. But the stabilization program that they have over in Dutchess County brings people in for just a little over 23 hours. It has to be less than 24 hours. But they also have counselors to speak with them. They have they will make the appointments and make sure there's follow-up. So that may give someone a better chance, you know, rather than going to the emergency room, having somebody care for them for an hour or two and then putting them back out. And I guess, you know, in some cases the police need to be called 2-3 times for the same person within a day, you know, just because if they're not in danger of hurting themselves or someone, you know, they're back out. But, you know, we could bring that back to the table. They're running a very successful program in Dutchess. It was initially brought to my attention by somebody who works at the Dutchess County Probation Department, you know, because again, if someone's acting irrational, you know, rather than arresting them for disorderly conduct, they have the option to take them to the stabilization center. So, you know, and then even Chief Sinagra from Saugerties had brought it up again last year, I think. So, I would like to take further look at that and see if there's funding or just that potential. And of course they could coordinate and work with Health Alliance, but you know, I believe we need more. I mean, I don't know if I can handle getting any more phone calls about young people suicides. I got three this week and they're all in their late 20s. And it's very sad. And it breaks the family's hearts. You know, talk about adding more emotional stress onto an already bad time. But we can't afford to keep losing our young people.
Definitely. There was a recent obituary where they literally called out and blamed the county for
happened in Saugerties.
Yeah.
And we were working with, you know, that individual. I don't want to go too far, but
sure.
I do want to say that I do think that while inpatient services at Broadway is not something that they're willing to look at, I do think maybe we should look at encouraging them to at least lease space to a provider that would do a stabilization type center, because if it is for 23 hours or less, then they wouldn't have to necessarily have that inpatient licensing. So while he said that they weren't willing to look at 40 inpatient beds at Broadway, you know, that medical village is going to have lots of opportunities for them to lease out and partner with other organizations. I will say that, you know, the facility, we've talked to People Inc. probably two or three times. They're the ones that run the facility over in Dutchess County, and it is great. It's not a self-sustaining program by any means. Dutchess County is providing lots of resources to that facility. They thought they were building it to a degree where it was going to be sustained by, you know, charging the patients, et cetera, and insurance, and they're still, you know, it's still underwater and Dutchess County kicks in the rest of the money. So it's an expensive thing, but I think it's something we have to look at.
I agree.
Thank you.
We got to start thinking outside of the box.
Yes.
It's not coming back to normal ways. Well, however, and I tell you, I know this is off the wall. I keep looking at Tech City. I'm like, what a great building to turn it into a hospital, a mental health hospital. You know? I mean, if it was possible, I mean, I don't know all the logistics behind it, but a be an incredible feat, and maybe not something that we should, you know, dismiss so easily.
Sure.
I mean, we're going to turn it into a COVID hospital overnight. I mean, why not?
It was something we were looking at.
That's right. Clearly, we're not getting cooperation from Westchester.
The one thing, I mean, they were going to have to, those beds were going to be lost for some point in time during construction. So, you know, when they're building, they're under construction on the new building, those 40 beds were going to go away no matter what during that construction period. It wasn't just moving them out for COVID helped facilitate that. But they were going to be gone anyway. We always thought they were going to come. They were going to be gone temporarily. We always thought they were going to come back.
Here's right? How I look at it. I look at it just like the landfill up in Syracuse is getting closed and we're going to have to deal with our trash very shortly. It's the same thing with the mental health. Those beds went away, so now we have to deal with that too. It's just another element that falls on our shoulders that we have to deal with. And I think we really should.
I just don't like the way it transpired. You know,
it just
feels dirty. It's wormy. You know, they took advantage of a situation. You know, whether we were ever going to get them back or not, I think is irrelevant. It's just the way
use COVID as an excuse.
Absolutely. And it's not going to be looked at as anything more than a money grab. So,
and he point blank said that.
Yep.
It's financial. Yep. That's the only reason why we don't have them is financially. Yep. It doesn't make them enough money.
Yep. Absolutely.
let's face it, the people that have to utilize those beds are more than likely don't have the financial means to begin with. That's part of the reason they're there.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's, and I think it was more than 40 beds. I think it was 60 beds. Weren't there 20 beds that were specific for substance use related issues? Yeah.
There was 40 mental health beds and 20 substance abuse beds.
Yep.
For a total of 60.
Yep.
Now, I do think the 20 substance abuse beds carried over to exactly 20 substance abuse beds at Mid-Hudson Regional.
Right.
It's the mental health beds that went from like 40 to 15 or whatever it was. And he was talking about them trying to work out to have it actually be 40.
Mark, if I could ask you, sorry, Craig.
No, go ahead.
I get passionate. I'm sorry. I kind of break the rules of decorum here. What's the actual percentage that we have now in the county, an increase in opioids and mental health, opioid deaths? And we have, it was like something like increase of like 75% during COVID or something stupid, right?
We were down like 1 year and we had a drastic cut. And now we're up slightly to where we were prior to that decrease. So we went from, I don't have the exact numbers. I can bring you back the numbers for 2020 and get you the numbers for 2019. But from 2018 to 2019, we went way down in our opioid overdose deaths.
Because
of not overdoses, overdose deaths, because we had Narcan that was readily available out in the community and the police agencies, and lots of Narcan was being used. And there was other reasons that we went way down. We are back above the 2018 levels right now. And in 2018, I think we were second or third worst county in the state, like that.
So I guess the point I was trying to make though, Mark, was that at a time COVID has increased that substantially. Yes. And at a time where we needed it the most is when they pulled it away from us. And they used COVID as the driving force or the engine to take it away from us, when in reality, that should have been the driving force to keep it. And I guess that's the part that's the hard pill to swallow. You know?
Yeah, I will say that they were not left with a lot of choices. I mean, at that point,
I get it.
The governor's office had taken control over the hospital systems. They told them they wanted to build a COVID hospital at that location and to empty it out and have it ready. And again, like Dr. Doyle said, there was people dying in the streets and in hallways down in overburdened hospitals down. It was a totally different time. But at the same time, I agree with you, COVID has made everything worse from a mental health and substance abuse perspective, because everybody feels so isolated, right?
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
The numbers actually increased during COVID because of what the pandemic has done to people. You know, I think we need to stop relying on WMC right now, and I think the county needs to look in other directions to try to bring those services back to Ulster County. And that's something we need to work on. However, you know, whether we have to provide it ourselves or find an outside vendor to do it for us, but we need to get that back. We need
it. Alrighty. Well, we'll get into resolutions. We'll start with resolution 29, approving the execution of a contract for $173,689 with Health Alliance Hospital, Broadway Campus. This is for state OMH pass-throughs. So.
It's a pass-through, so I'll make the motion.
Yeah. Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Resolution 30, approving the execution of a contract for $100,000 with Health Alliance Hospital Broadway Campus for the methadone treatment program.
I'll make that.
Second.
Yeah. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, resolution 104, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute a contract with New York State Department of Health for LHD, LHD, Local Health Department, support for flu and COVID response.
Yeah, motion.
I'll second.
Second. All right. Is $39,153 from the feds.
Mark, can you give us a little background on that?
Yeah, so I mean, this is both for flu and COVID clinics. It's state aid. I think it's probably coming from, sorry, let me pull it up.
These weren't federal funds? I thought that they were federal funds.
Yeah, it's coming from healing, but it's from okay. the yeah. state DOH.
Gotcha.
So, yep. Not healing, sorry. It's CARES Act funds being distributed from the state health department in order for us to put together, you know, our health, our flu and COVID clinics. And it's mostly for educational purposes, getting out.
I thought the flu disappeared since we've had COVID.
It almost did. I mean, if you think about it, wearing a mask all the time, it's like,
exactly.
We knew that was going to come because Australia, who had their flu season before us, it dropped to almost nothing. So
because of the masks. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. People are actually washing their hands. Yeah.
Right. What a concept. Right.
They're yeah. not going to work sick.
Right. Seriously.
So
sorry, I just had to bring a little levity to it.
Not everything I've noticed, even cold. My goodness, I have the twin toddlers in daycare, and they've been good. Like they don't have colds. There aren't any stomach viruses when it used to be rampant. Yeah, knock on wood. Are you knocking for me there, Al?
Yeah, I appreciate that. People keep saying the vaccine makes you feel a little under the weather for a couple of days, and I'm kind of like, great. I haven't been under the weather in a year.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, no, hey, Abe, I got my second shot and I felt like the next day I felt like a truck hit me, but it was only for like one day and I was fine. So I'll yeah. get that one day. Of
well, I look forward to getting run over by that truck.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's better than the alternative. No, mine made me so tired. I slept for like 10 hours, which I usually only get like 5 hours a night. And I'm not a sleeper.
And so. The next day you felt great, didn't you?
Oh my God. I woke up the next morning. I never felt better. I don't know.
I know. That's what happened.
Or what it killed inside of me. You know, it was amazing. Yeah, it was great.
And great 5G coverage too.
Yeah. It worked great for me. I tell you, the next day I felt it was amazing.
Yep. Yep. So, all right, we'll keep going. Resolution 105. So approving the execution of a contract. $284,000.
I don't think we voted on
that. Oh, we didn't vote? Oh, okay. Oh. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Sorry.
Having too much fun.
Yeah. All right. 105, approving the execution of a contract for $284,859 with Family Services. This is for substance abuse prevention campaign.
That.
Second.
So this came out of our HEAL task force. So they basically did an RFP type system and they had working groups work through each of these contracts and Family Services were selected to provide these services through that.
And what do they mean by education, Mark? I mean, they're gonna do outreach, they're gonna do Narcan workshops.
So they're going to work, I'm just going off the Schedule A here, but they're going to do a student leadership council and put student work groups together in the schools. It's mostly through that school leadership. So it's okay. At the various Ulster County school districts, and they're going to work with the leadership council to get prevention out in the schools.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Resolution 106, approving the execution of a contract for $112,500 with, what's it? some
Amati.
Amati? Yeah, okay. Center for Expansion of the Recovery Outreach Program.
I'll move
this. To cover 24/7 days a week.
I'll just say, I think Samadhi is a great program. It's in my district, and I've spoken with their executive directors. You know, they work very hard over there, and I would definitely support them.
Samadhi, it's pronounced?
Samadhi, yeah.
Oh, I have an H in it. That's why I didn't.
Yeah, it is. It does have an H in it. I think it's silent.
Oh, some. Yeah, yeah, gotcha.
They do amazing work. They really do.
Yeah.
This is another one of those federal pass through the healing grant.
Hey, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Our resolution 107, approving the execution of a contract for $100,000 with the Hudson Valley Community Services for the development of a street outreach program for Ulster County residents struggling with opioid disorder. Move for discussion.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
All right, discussion again. This is another federal pass-through, I think.
Same thing, healing, yeah. Healing. And it's for harm reduction and prevention.
Can't go wrong with this.
Mm-hmm. No brainer, right, Al?
Pretty much, no brainer.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, 108, amending the county budget to accept an allocation of funds from Horowitz Foundation for $10,000 to enhance the county's Family First Readiness Initiative.
I'll make that motion.
Second it. I'll second it for discussion.
Yeah. Any discussion?
Mark?
Yay to the
foster foundation. Parent trainer. It's to enhance our foster parent training program and outreach. This foundation gives us various grants throughout the year, ranging from $5,000-$10,000. Sometimes it's to buy computer equipment. It's typically for, this is for professional services for training for foster parents. They focus on foster parents.
Mark, could I ask you, how many people does this actually affect, or does it help?
I mean, this is just for doing, I don't have a set number because this will be used to help us with our outreach efforts and just for training. I can come back and find out how many.
I'm just saying, typically, I mean, how many are we? Are we talking 100? Are we talking 10? Are we talking 5,000?
No, I think this is in the 100, you know, 80 to 100 range is what we would use this for. That's, we do a couple of training sessions, et cetera, 40 or 50 people, I think.
Okay.
We certainly don't have thousands of foster care families in the county. I wish we did, because I think there's probably need for it, right? But
that's what I was asking. I don't really know the answer to that.
Yeah, it's in the hundreds.
Okay.
Okay. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, resolution 109, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an interim municipal agreements with the towns of Saugerties and the village of Ellenville to provide domestic violence investigators to the county family and child advocacy center.
No brainer.
So this is a program we've had.
I'll remove it for discussion.
I'll move it.
Right.
Second.
Okay. Go ahead, Mark.
Because of the budget cuts, we had notified each of these municipalities last year that 2021, we were not going to be able to team with them. We were going to continue these services with our own investigators. But this program, we pay the salary of a village police officer in Ellenville and one in Saugerties, in one of the town police in Saugerties, and the town pays the fringe. They get trained, they work with us for a year or two, and then they go back and they have these skills. Unfortunately, when we were looking at last year's budget, this was one where we felt like we could redistribute the work to the coexisting teams that the county had. I'm not going to say that our budget situation is bright and shiny, but it's gotten to the point where we at least recognize that this, which is a very much needed service, and the case numbers are increasing all the time, that we felt like it was time to get this back on the books. So we reached out, and both Chief Sinagra and Chief Matrician and Supervisor Costello and the mayor up in Ellenville were all, you know, ecstatic that we could do this program again.
Absolutely. It's an important one. It's unfortunate that, you know, we need things like this, but I don't know if the committee's familiar with exactly what they investigate, but it's all child related abuses from physical abuse to sex trafficking to, you know, all the really bad, unfortunate stuff. So no, it's great. Great program.
It could be family as well. So,
okay.
So it could be, you know, spousal. It could be, if it is, it's typically the most kind of, you know, reprehensible and violent in various different cases. So these are not, you know, fun caseloads to work, but as, you know, Legislator Lopez said there, it's very important, and unfortunately we need it.
Yep. Mark, what about the caseworkers and the ADAs and I mean our staff that's exposed? Do they get any assistance? I mean, they must see horrible things, you know, photos of crime scenes and I mean, this is a little outside of this resolution, but, you know, I mean, some of these acts of violence are horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, we have EAP services, like employee assistant services that we do through personnel for any employee. So if somebody felt like they, you know, went through a traumatic situation working one of the caseworkers or anything else, we would get them the help they need.
Okay.
Amazing, amazing special people. I don't know how they do it.
Yes.
I
would
do it. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 110, amending the county budget to accept an application of child abuse or neglect prevention and treatment, Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services in the amount of $70,000. Move.
I'll move it.
Second. Okay. Yep. These are all state funds, I believe.
It's a formula grant. State funds. It's federal funds flowing again through the state. OCFS. Sure. You know, they notify us. There's an attachment here that shows what each county gets. They notify us that our award is this year was $70,000.
Yeah,
it was budgeted for. We just don't actually put it in. I mean, it was anticipated. We just don't put it in the budget until we know exactly what our allocation will be.
Sure, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Resolution 111, amending county budget to accept an additional allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services to continue the Safe Harbor program.
Second.
Okay. Does human trafficking prevention? Yep.
33,000. State. Again, this is feds through the state, Mark?
This is actually state revenue.
It's just state revenue. Okay. Gotcha.
And these are actual Ulster County residents? Or
is this is prevention. This is to help with outreach and raise awareness of the problem more than anything.
Okay.
So 33,000 doesn't get you a whole lot. These are you'll see we do like advertisements on Safe Harbor. It's outreach on the program. And then we have caseworkers at OCFS, you know, at our family child services that work with, if anybody calls in to the hotline or whatever, we would have them work with our team over at DSS with family services. But
And the outreach probably targets more the younger people.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Resolution 127, confirming the reappointment of a member of the Community Service Board and the board's PWDD subcommittee. This PWDD, people with developmental disabilities. Yeah.
I'd love to.
Acronyms have always kind of thrown me for a loop. That's why if I don't recognize them, I like to share.
I'm glad you clarified that because I had no idea what PWDD was. Yeah.
Move for discussion.
I'll second it.
And this is for the appointment of Claire Peterson with the term expiring. Well, I guess to be reappointment. Effective. Yeah, I'm sorry?
Reappointment.
This is already there.
Okay, all right. With the term to expire on 12/31/2024.
Mark, there's been discussion on maybe bringing some professionals on that board or being able to serve on that board. Has there been any other advances on that? Or,
I mean, some of the people who serve on the board are professionals. Are you referring, like, we're required to have a psychiatrist on the board.
Okay.
And
okay.
We don't currently have one.
Oh,
one
I must have
spoke, but there's not too many in the county. But we are trying to always recruit psychiatrists and other physicians to the committee, to the board, I should say. But like one of the ones who has a resume on here, Denise Ranahan, I mean, she's a licensed LMHC, I don't even know what that is, actually. Mental health counselor.
Very good. Okay. I've attended some of their meetings. You have a good group of people there.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Resolution 128, confirming the reappointment of a member to the Community Service Board and the board's mental health subcommittee. Move it.
I'll move it.
Second. And this is for John Brown with a term to expire 12/31/24. Discussion?
Okay. It's a reappointment, right?
Reappointment. Mm-hmm. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Last resolution, 129, confirming the appointment of members to the Community Service Board Mental Health Subcommittee.
Discussion.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay.
Reappointment?
No, these are
appointments.
Appointments.
Four of them.
New appointment.
Yeah, new appointments. I think resumes are always attached to these, right, Nettie?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. So I don't know if anybody's familiar with the names Terrence Conklin, Julianne Spearman, Daniel Bliss, and Denise Ranahan. Yeah, no. Mm-hmm.
Mark, help us out.
Sure. Well, Terry Conklin works at a Institute for Family Health and applied for the board. He and I had a good conversation and thought that he would be a positive addition to the Community Services Board. He's also working on getting, he's a care navigator for the Institute for Family Health. So he works on getting people with mental health needs there, you know, met with services, and he's well kind of, he's knowledgeable about mental health services in Ulster County. Daniel Bliss is a currently works down as an adjunct professor down at Fordham. He's a neuroscientist. He has his PhD in neuroscience, and has pretty substantial volunteer work through NAMI or other depression and bipolar support groups. He had and other projects with psychiatric outreach. Again, he and I had a good conversation in an interview. Julianne Spearman is a mental health counselor, as is Diane Ranahan. Both are mental health counselors in Ulster County. We sort like up until this month, getting these appointments in, we've been not able to make a quorum for many of these community service board meetings. We had a few people recently term out, a few others have resigned, and we really needed to get people on board. We actually still have a few openings to add some other positive individuals, if any of you know people interested in working in the mental health community.
I know someone that might be interested.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I think all their resumes look really great. And there's an interesting variety here. You've got some people with children, you know, working with children, people working with adults. So it's an interesting mix.
I think they're all going to be great additions to the board.
And thank you for taking this on, Mark. I know you attended one of their last meeting where they were concerned about, you know, not having enough members on. And Mark actually set it up so they had a special meeting so they could take a look and approve these people. So he was very diligent in getting this board back up and running.
And it's just what we were talking about tonight. How can we support as much as we can the efforts that we've got already going? So I second that. Thank you.
Well, with COVID, I've been falling down on the job. I should have probably got these members on the board months ago, but
you are pretty much a slacker. We know that, Mark.
I know. So.
Yeah, you could only recruit a neuroscientist from Fordham. Come on.
Underachiever.
Yeah. Jeez.
No. Do we vote? We did, right?
No. Yeah.
All right. All in favor?
All right.
So, all righty. Well, that wraps up the resolutions.
Thank you.
Does anybody have anything for the good of the committee?
Can I just say thank you? Can I say thank you for bringing Dr. Doyle today? Yeah. Really appreciate that effort to, you know, hear directly from him. I didn't love all the answers, but it was good to hear the answers directly. So thank you for that.
I agree, Peter. I mean, we may not have liked it, but he was honest and straightforward, and it's what it is. Thanks.
I do have good news on the vaccine front. If you don't mind me sharing really quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's been a push, obviously, now with the Johnson & Johnson vaccines getting approved. New York State had gotten an abundance of Pfizer vaccines last week that they needed to move. So this week we received so far 3,300 vaccines, which is a significant increase from the 700 that we had been getting. The vast majority of those are only to be used for seniors, but that's a good thing because they're one of our more vulnerable groups. We'll do about another 400 essential workers, and the rest go to with either seniors or those with underlying conditions. So we'll have, you know, three clinics set up this week. One on Thursday, we're going to use SUNY Ulster Gymnasium for the first time, because we actually have local pharmacist Neil Smoller, who's been doing a lot of work, but he's going to run out of our field house on Thursday of this week, and he's going to do well, he got 3,200 as well, just for seniors. So we're going to work our way through the 65 plus group fairly quickly, hopefully in the next few weeks, as long as numbers stay like this, and that'll allow us to get to the other groups sooner than we had thought. So that's a good thing. I would encourage anybody who hasn't seen it to, if you ever want a tour of, you know, the field house, we're going to be running there Friday and Saturday of this week. And I think it's quite impressive. We have it, the ability to do about 1500 people there a day, and we're going to be getting about max capacity, 1400 on Friday and 1200 on Saturday. So
these are all based through appointments.
Yes. But if you ever want to see it in action, feel free to, you know, call me. I can arrange for walking you through it.
Thank you.
Great. Very good. It's good to hear. You know, it's kind of, you know,
it's been frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Good. Okay.
Hopefully this isn't a one-time. I mean, they call it a one-time supplemental, but hopefully as the numbers go up, we're also going to be, I was on a call with the governor's office today. They're looking for numbers of homebound seniors that we have in our county. Because they're going to get an allocation of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine out this week. So we only have to go there once as opposed to going there twice. So we're going to work on getting to about 125 homebound seniors' houses. So
you're talking door to door?
Yeah, we're going to go to their house.
Whoa. Wow. Okay. That's
more than that in the county. That's about what we can do in a week when we have everything else going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's a team. You have to be there for about a half hour at least.
Right.
So
make sure they don't have any reaction to it and all that.
Exactly. You got to observe them for, depending on their underlying conditions, it could be anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes of observation after the vaccine is given. So. Okay.
All right. Nobody has anything else, then
we're going to see.
Should we adjourn?
Guys, a minute anyway.
I'll move.
You get a second?
Second.
Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good night.
You too.